Migscast, and I am Steve Migs, and you're probably thinking, well, I already saw that we have a Migscast this week, but this is a bonus edition of the Migscast. Just me on this one, and it's all about the Glorious Suns. I had an opportunity to chat with the Glorious Suns right before they did their show at the Showbox, which was incredible. They came to the station to do a bunch of stuff for our radio station and our company, and they had a couple extra few minutes, so we popped into a studio, and I sat down with a couple of the members. If you've been listening to the Migscast, you've heard me talk about the Glorious Suns probably almost every episode. Talk about them on the air all the time. They're my absolute favorite band. My wife and I, we obsess over this band, love all of their records. Their live show is on a whole other level. And so the opportunity to chat with some of the guys in the band was definitely something I was going to pass up on. And in studio with me is Brett Emmons, who's their frontman, Jay Emmons, their guitarist, and also Chris Koster, who is their other guitarist as well. It's a really fun chat where we talk about the band's live shows, their new record. The movie Youngblood comes up, Kanye West. I mean, we talk about some bunch of random stuff. And I also tell them how important they are to me and why they're so important to me musically. So it's a really cool chat. If you're a fan of the Glorious Suns, I absolutely think you're going to love this. And if you're not a fan, maybe you'll become one after hearing this interview. So why don't we just jump right into it? My chat with Brett, Jay, and Chris from the Glorious Suns. I am here with the fellows in Glorious Suns. I've got Jay, Chris, and also Brett. You guys just did a bunch of stuff for our radio station. I appreciate you taking a couple more minutes to chat with me.
Of course.
I don't even know if I have really questions. It's going to be a lot of just me telling you guys how great you are. So if you guys are okay with that.
Love it.
It's just, you're one of those bands that for both my wife and I, like every day we are always talking about a certain song that we heard, or it's hard to explain, but it's like, since the first time we heard you guys, we fell in love with you. And then we saw you live, and it was like, okay, this is a next level thing. And then we started seeing you live more, realized, okay, each show is different and unique. And it's not like a band that just kind of goes up there and does the same set every night. And I think there's something special about that. Like, you can tell, like, there's an emotion when you guys are up on stage, at least from our perspective as fans, that I think is unique. And it's not so much really even a question, but is that something that you guys set out to be? Like, because a lot of bands go up there and they have, like, okay, we're doing the same set list. We got a light show that's going to be doing the same things for every song. And it's almost like a formula that they go through every single night. And I don't see that with you guys.
This most recent tour, we kind of finally found ourselves at a place where we have the catalog to be able to do that and, like, you know, kind of switch up the experience every night, even mm-hmm. for ourselves. And it's also, you know, some nights it is a gamble because, you know, there's some nights where you really don't know. You're just kind of throwing darts
out. You miss the bus.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that keeps it interesting for us. But it's also, you know, it's a vulnerable place to put yourself because you can make a lot of mistakes and hit the wrong groove and kind of lose people and stuff. But for us, it's certainly for myself, that's kind of the whole jazz of it. It's just like, like I said, we're finally at that place now where we've got the catalog where we can really give a different vibe every night.
So. When you say you lose the groove, is there times where you know, like, okay, we're losing the groove, and what do you do to get back in that right mindset?
More like a connection with the crowd, you know? Yeah. It's like, if you put two or three down-tempo songs together after, like, you know, six or seven rockers, you're going to notice a very different atmosphere mm-hmm. by the end of those that run of three songs. So then it's like, how do we get them back to where we need them to finish the set kind of thing?
It's a gamble, too, because, like, there's no rhyme or reason to it. You can play a song one night that's just, like, gangbusters and everybody goes nuts, and the next night for some reason it just hits differently. And we're lucky enough to have at least four or five songs that are like every night are going to go over. Shotgun, My Poor Heart, songs like that are just no matter what, they're going to be that part of the set. So you just try to like take your gambles and make your little soup.
And I think to add to Chris's earlier to the question earlier is we kind of fell into that. Like we would play the same set for like three or four nights in a row, and then it would actually get bad because we would get bored on stage and people could feel us, you know, going through the motions, and then the show wouldn't go as good. So we would have to switch it up.
Well, that's kind of like what rock and roll should be. I mean, in a sense, like you should feel like there's almost like you're teetering on the edge, don't you think? I mean, so many bands, it seems like they've done it so many times that it doesn't feel. It feels very safe.
Yeah.
I think people fall into a rhythm of something that works, mm-hmm. and that's great. We've even been, I don't know if it's guilty, but we've done that in the past where there's been tours where, you know, we hit the same set list in the same order for a good while.
For us, it just becomes a crutch, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, it's easy to turn your mind off and just use that same set. And then you can go, because you're so used to the set, you can go out and drink till 3 or 4 in the morning and smoke 1,000 cigarettes or, you know, stay up till whatever time, and you'll be able to go and hit that set.
Yeah.
Like at least to 75%, but you're not actually playing that much better, I don't think. And I don't think people are, you'll never get that like gangbusters kind of, you know, crazy moment where you're kind of just one with the audience and perfectly present in a room with somebody that you get when you switch it up and kind of.
Especially nowadays, like, I think people get less and less of that real, like, I think people can feel it more than ever when something really kind of, like you said, like, you know, skating on the edge of it or whatever is happening. I think people, like, kind of feel that more than ever, because I don't think there's that much of that out there anymore in any field of art or whatever.
One thing that I question is, I think some people like it. I think some people really, like, respect that teetering on the edge kind of rock and roll fast train vibe. But I think also that I don't know about people who, you know, might be younger than myself who grew up basically listening to these shows. They never seen anything like it before, so I'm not sure really if they know how to feel at that moment. Some people might like it just instinctually, but I think some people tend to get afraid because of that.
I think we're one of the only rock bands out there not playing to track also, which is a very big difference, because we can, you know, Brett has a way of kind of conducting the show just with his actions and with, you know, that we have, you know, breakdowns and songs that one night will be 5 minutes long of him talking and the next night it'll be 4 seconds long. And so it allows us to just change on the fly and be this organic, you know, functioning thing.
It kind of allows like different songs to take on a new life depending on the night, depending on the mood. And
whereas if you're playing the tracks, you're locked into,
you're stuck to that.
16 bars here, 4 bars here and whatever, you know? So it's like, so that keeps it fresh for us too, is that we can keep rolling along with the vibe.
I remember even like the first time I saw you guys at the Crocodile, and it was right from the get-go, like you start off and I'm like, I feel like I'm at a party. You know what I mean? Like, not like a club party, but like a hanging out with my boys, everyone's singing along, it's very communal, and you guys are just killing it up on stage. And it was like, I think the moment you guys went into Kill the Lights, and it was just like, there's a moment where you guys are just losing your minds on the guitars and you're just feeling the moment. I was just like staring there in awe, and it was just like everything was like firing on all cylinders. And I remember looking at my wife, and when that set finished, and you guys were one of the opening bands, and I was like, we need to see a full set. And that's when we saw you guys were playing in Vancouver, drove up there, and we're like, we're going to see them anytime you guys are anywhere near us. And each time there's always a certain moment, it's not the same song. And it's like what you brought up, like how you have that freedom of like each song takes on a life of its own in that live performance. I truly appreciate that as a fan.
Thank you.
That, you know, anytime you go see a band, you're not getting to see the same thing each time, and you just don't know. And it's powerful, just the feeling of the give and take that you have with the crowd. And it was one show, I remember, there was like one numbskull in the crowd, and he was like starting a fight. It was in Vancouver. And you stopped the set, and you just said, hey, look, all these songs, we're writing about love, and you're being a dick.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was just like, man, it was like, you just, everything was just, everyone was being so aware at that moment. And it just, it went from like this really awkward moment of this guy being a pain in the ass to like, yeah, you're damn right. This is about like us loving and having a good time. Yeah. And I just thought that was something that was just so freaking powerful, because that's what music should be. And it's like, this guy was not interpreting it the right way.
Yeah. And that's a line that I use, because like constantly to tell these people, because we get these fights at our shows sometimes, and they're all, it's always the same. I don't want to generalize, but it's always the same kind of guy.
Yeah.
He's always misinterpreting everything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes for the thrash, but he forgets about, you know, the heart in it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that it's always been a point of contention for me, because I don't know. I wish that I don't like the band to be represented that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's like a big part of why you don't want to sing heavy anymore, right?
100%. Yeah, we don't sing heavy anymore, because I wrote it when I was 18 years old, and like I started writing it when I was 18, but it changed many times. But it just doesn't represent anything that I think we're about anymore.
I always thought that there was like a bit of tongue-in-cheek kind of like like a bit of an in joke with that song that nobody got.
There is an in joke that I'm not going to really discuss, but it was. It's been misinterpreted so many times.
You
lose your stomach for playing it, and it's just, you know, it's the same thing. You don't want to be represented that way.
No, I get that. It's unfortunate. There's people out there that you know, kind of like drop a turd in the punch bowl in a sense. Yeah, you know what I mean? And it's just like, okay, thanks. Like,
yeah,
because of the way you're interpreting it, it kind of screws it up for everybody.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't need to feed the meatheads. They're getting fed enough from other places.
Dude, even in the world, like in what we do in radio, sometimes we'll do silly jokes, and I think that people are in on, like, okay, you get that I'm being sarcastic, right, and like this is super tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
and I don't think like then you meet somebody like. They're like relating to that person that I'm mocking, really. Yeah. I'm like, oh, crap. That,
yeah.
Yeah, that gets in your head, though. Like, you're like, okay, I can't joke like that because no one's taking it as a joke. They think it's like gospel. That's stupid.
Yeah, it's a classic, like Dave Chappelle talking about racist coming up to him because of the Chappelle show and thanking him.
Which has got to mess with his head. He's like, do not get what I'm saying. Like,
come on.
Like, just if you have like a half a point on an IQ level, you should be able to know this is me mocking that. But the new record of War and Everything is just one of those records that every time I listen to it, I it's like you pick up something new. Like, there's like a great like layers of sounds that I enjoy. Like, okay, oh, that bass line's really sick, or the drum part. And I'm a drummer, so I tend to nerd out about the drumming. And every record, I always love the production of your drums because they feel real, and they feel like you're in a room with the drummer as opposed to like this pro-tooled, chopped up, perfectly processed sound.
Shout out to Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, but for the record, for you guys, I mean, is it like... I don't know. It's just like felt like you guys just finished touring in support of Young Beauties and then just went right into the studio. Was that something that you guys wanted to do? Did you feel pressure or what? Because it doesn't feel like it when you listen to it. It doesn't feel like an album like, oh, we got to hurry up and put this out. It feels very...
The best part about this record was there was no pressure at all. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the reason why we went in after the Canadian tour, was because we wanted to use that momentum to kind of, you know, feed into... the work, you know, making the songs.
There's a certain amount of, like, you know, capitalizing on when you're hot coming off the road and you're playing really well together. You kind of just want to dive in somewhere and chronicle that if you can, you know.
It's funny because when you look back on it, it might have been smarter to take a little bit of time just for our mental health. Because we finished the album and then got right back on the road.
Yeah.
And we've been on the road since. So I don't think we'll be going in and, well, you never know.
Was it a certain like song that decided, like, got you guys the juices flowing? We're like, let's just pick up and go with the momentum? Or was there like a moment where...
There's a bit of that. Brett's always got great songs that inspire. But there was also like looking at the next 5 months and realizing if we're going to make an album, we have to do it now because we're going to be on the road so goddamn much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could probably always go into the studio and work on some ideas that Brett has and come out with some great ideas. Yeah.
Because we just did that again.
Yeah,
like a few months ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're supposed to say that. But
it doesn't matter. Really, yeah, we got 14 songs in the can.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Recorded?
Yeah.
All done, yeah.
Can you send me a link or something?
I need to make some lyrical changes, I think.
Wow.
Dropbox link is.
Yeah, right.
That was even crazier than A War on Everything, because that one was like, I woke up the last day of the studio and it felt like I'd been in a dream. And listening back to it now, well, not listening back to it because we made a conscious decision not to listen to it, but you sit there wondering if you wrote a complete pile of dog shit. Because you can't really remember anything but like the moments of everybody like celebrating.
Well, which has nothing to do with the bottle of bourbon you were drinking
every day.
Well, it's funny because you bring up like the house party aspect of the live show or whatever. This last record, well, War and Everything too, but even more so this last batch of tunes is like literally we recorded it in a house party. Like,
it was like 17 hours a day sometimes, like there was 5 hours of sleep and then getting back up and doing it again.
Like open door policy, people are coming and going, they're partying in the kitchen while we're recording in the living room.
And I wasn't distracting at all?
Yeah, it's a nightmare for me.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
Nah. It's like you're cutting vocal takes and there's 40 people in the next room watching hockey and stuff. And you got the producer going, okay, shut up. And then everybody's quiet like for 10 seconds. Yeah, exactly.
See, he complains, but these guys are on totally different schedules. So me and Fred lived in the house. We would wake up. Jay would come in for, 8 hours?
Jay's the morning guy.
10 hours.
Morning guy, 8 to 10 hours. And then he would leave and go home and, like, you know, go back to his dog and his girlfriend. And by the time he left, Chris would show up and put in the same shift. Mm. So me and Fred were just like, holy hell. Like 18-hour days. And I was definitely self-medicating a little bit.
This last one, too, we had a really good team built where there was like four or five different workstations happening at all times. So you got one guy in the studio tracking drums and then another guy editing the drums. And then, you know, there's all these little workstations around. It was really something to see, actually. A
manufacturing plant.
Very streamlined.
Yeah.
It was Motown Kingston
edition.
Yeah, it was
pretty wild.
Would you do it the same way for the next time?
Yeah. It was a great process.
Well, for you guys?
We've kind of dialed into a process that is getting more refined each time, and we're all kind of more and more comfortable with how things are going and understand what works and what doesn't. Yeah. So I imagine, like, we did those 14 songs we did in, I think, 14 days at the top of December. So I don't think we could get much more efficient than that.
No.
But definitely always learning.
You guys did a content thing for our corporate station and asked us some questions, and one part blew my mind, which is super stupid, but like you brought up the movie Youngblood, and I don't know if many people know it.
You know that movie?
I grew up playing hockey, so I'm like, no, that movie is like the Bible.
I actually quite like it.
I don't know if I still romanticize about it because I grew up loving it, and like, oh, I wish I had a billet like that. You know, like, it's like the most ridiculous
a billet like that, yeah.
What an insane movie, though. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess it probably isn't super popular here if you're not someone that...
I wouldn't think so. That's one of those ones that, like, as I said over there, like, we watch... I watch a lot of movies on the bus because I'm up all night, but me and our drummer, Adam, that's... Youngblood is at least a couple times a tour. Mm-hmm. That's always a go-to. Oh, and Goon, too, also. Have you seen Goon?
Yes. If there's a hockey movie, I've watched every single one. Have Goon's you seen it? Was it Breakaway, one. Where it's like the Eastern Indian guys started a hockey team?
No, I've never seen
that. Okay, spoiler alert. It's a terrible movie, but at some point they realize they can't play well unless they have a turban on, and so they make a helmet that looks like a turban.
Oh, my God.
And that gives them... It's so bad.
So we're downloading that tonight.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to watch a really bad movie, even I was like watching this, I'm like, I love Breakaway? Hockey movies, but even it's just called Breakaway. I'm pretty sure it's called
Breakaway. Quite a hilarious title, too.
I look forward to hearing your review on this.
Very imaginative title.
You have me at turban helmet.
Turban helmets. Like, who would have thought? That's the key to playing well in hockey. And I totally agree when you talked earlier about just the pitfalls of Twitter and social media.
Yeah.
As we do in radio, we have to constantly be on those. And it just sets you in a spiral. It's like, gosh.
My problem more is, like, if I'm on it, then I'm on it. So, like, I'll tweet something, but the more you tweet, the more you're on Twitter. So then you check that search engine, and all the news comes up, and it's like, you know, four die in friggin' Australia wildfires. Yep. Like, it's like just this pile of shit being like put on your mind at all times, and it's just so dark.
It's like a flood of bad news, and then there's like the most miserable people commenting on the bad
about
news,
it,
making it even worse. And, like, my gosh, there's people who think like this.
And blaming people for it. Yep. And it's like just too much. I can't handle it, to be honest. But.
Well, I know you guys have a bunch of stuff to do, and I'm sure you've been like doing a million things. I do want to thank you guys I'm thanking you for making great music. I know you're just doing what you do and probably don't realize it maybe from your perspective, but as a fan, I mean, a lot of your songs just speak in ways. I still, to this day, on the air at least a couple times a week, your band comes up, and I'm like, you need to check these guys out. And I'll always get these texts from listeners like, I'm so glad you recommended the Glorious Sons. Oh, now cool. They've gone the rabbit hole of listening to all the records and falling in love with them. But there's just one moment I would feel like in my own head, like I just need to thank you guys for it. Because when I saw you guys for the first show, my wife and I, who now we have a kid, but we at the time were going through some like awful fertility issues. Oh. And every day was a bad news, like, you know, from IVFs not working to IUIs going broke, all this stuff. And it was just like, I just can't stay positive. You know what I mean? It was like that night we went and saw you guys. It was like a Sunday night at the Crocodile. And it was like when you guys went to Everything's All Right. And it's like, I know that song's not about that, but it's like, you know how you interpret things at certain moments.
It's about whatever you want it to be.
And when that chorus kicks in, it's just like, and the backing vocals come up, and it's just like, man, you just felt like everything's going to be all right, if that makes sense. Like, it's like that moment when a song means so much more than what I ever thought it would. And to this day, like, I mean, if I hear that song, I think about that dark moment.
Yeah.
And just how, like, music, which I always feel like gets me out of ruts from whatever bands and, you know, certain songs. Like, there's a Pearl Jam song called Present Tense that, like, really got me out of, like, the worst depression of my life because it was just so, like, poignant at that moment. And that song is right up there, too, in the sense that it just hit me in a way, like, I'm like, you know what? Like, I just keep, you know, you just keep pushing forward and keep things going. And then here we are now with a 2-month-old child. And it's kind of cool to have this moment to be able to thank you guys for creating something that can resonate with a fan to help us get out of our own heads and forget that, you know, the crap that we're going through and that there's maybe a light at the end of the tunnel that I didn't even realize at that time.
Well, wow. Thanks, man. I'm glad to hear that.
It's not a question. Means, it's like, you guys are great.
Thanks, man.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you for that.
Good for you, man.
Yeah. So I look forward to one day.
Boy or girl.
It's a girl, baby Tatum. It's her name. She just makes weird sounds all the time right now. I'm just, you know, she's breathing, so I think I'm doing a good job. It's like one of those things. But yeah, you guys are being played all the time in the house, and, like, you know, we're hoping that subconsciously we're making her a fan, and she's not going to, like, pick one of these YouTube pop stars that, like, God dang it, I got to listen to this now.
She probably will.
Yeah, she will. I'll be like,
I have a little boy who just turned 6, and his favorite song is Old Town Road, and I'm just like, what? What's happening while I'm away?
I remember getting the Spice Girls album when I was younger and being pumped.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love the damn Ghostbusters theme as a kid. Like, I could not get enough of it.
Oh, jeez. Don't say that around Jay.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. You don't like horror movies.
Too many dark memories.
And then, just to wrap things up, I totally agree about the Kanye stuff that you talked about with the corporate stuff.
Oh, cool.
And still, my favorite moment was when my wife did not realize I was a Kanye cover that you guys do.
Right away.
She was like, oh, I hope they do that live. I hope they do that live. I'm bummed they didn't do it live or whatever. And then one day I'm like, you know it's a cover, right? And she's like, I didn't even realize that. And I played the original, and she's like, whoa, I never thought I liked the Kanye song. This is awesome.
It's a good song.
It's a great song.
A lot of people, we get a lot of that. The people really hate that guy, but I think it goes back to, you know, again, like this kind of stew of dishonesty that people are inundated with on the internet and just in today's, and people don't like the truth. And, you know, the truth is whatever you think it is, but whatever you want to say about Kanye West, he's always speaking his truth.
He's unapologetic about who he is.
Which is what I admire.
And it's all like, it sucks because a lot of rock and roll fans don't like Kanye West.
He's like the most rock and roll artist.
But he is rock. Yeah, exactly.
He's so counterculture. He's so like,
It's very, and someone said they saw him live, and there's a moment in his set where Jesus comes out to thank Kanye. Right?
White Jesus is what he referred to him as. Jesus comes out.
I was like, I'm so bummed I missed this. Like, that's like a whole other level of confidence.
he wears a mask for the first 90 minutes of the show, and then white Jesus comes out and he takes off his mask.
Oh, that one is it?
That was beautiful, man. That was the Yeezus tour. He also, the entire set design was a mountain. He just did the entire thing from the top of a mountain.
Unreal.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking a few minutes out. Looking forward to tonight's show over at the Showbox and wearing everything's in stores or online or however you listen to your music. Highly recommended on vinyl as well, which is the way I love listening to it at home. So thanks as always for doing what you guys do.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
That was great, man. Thanks for those stories.
All right, that's Brett, Jay, and Chris from the Glorious Sons. Check out their brand new record, A War on Everything. Actually, check out all of their records. They're all very unique and different, but it's definitely the same band. There's a great vibe and a great spirit behind their music and their emotion and the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. It's a band that is unlike any other band. I mean, honestly, it's right there with Pearl Jam. It's like one of those bands that I will always speak the good word about. So check them out. And if they come back to town anytime soon, I highly recommend it. Ran into a lot of Mixcast listeners at that show with the Showbox thanking me for turning them on to this band. So that's pretty awesome. Also, just remember, you can always leave us an email, themigscast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail or a text message, 253-271-4787. Let me know what you think about the band or whatever else you want to talk about. We'll be addressing it next time when I got Glenn and the Rev in the studio with me. Until then, listen to the Glorious Sons and stay positive.